All right, welcome in everyone to your deep dive all about mitral valve surgery.
It's a pretty big topic.
Yeah, it is. So we're going to be focusing in on the choice between repair and replacement, especially when it comes to something called non-ischemic mitral regurgitation or NIMR.
Yeah, and IMR will probably be saying that a lot.
Yeah, we will. So to help us break all of this down, we've got a research study that looked at patient outcomes. We've got a Cochrane review on cardiac rehab and a few book chapters that really go into surgical techniques and decision making.
So we'll be jumping around a little.
We will, but hopefully by the end of this deep dive, you'll be able to understand the pros and cons of each approach and maybe know a few questions you might want to ask your surgeon if you're facing this choice.
It's a journey a lot of people face, and it's good to be informed.
Totally. So before we get into all the specifics of repair versus replacement, can you just give us like a quick refresher on what the mitral valve actually does and why we're focusing in on NIMR specifically?
Sure. So, the mitral valve is one of your four heart valves, and it acts like a one-way door between the left atrium and the left ventricle.
Okay.
And its job is to make sure that the blood flows forward and doesn't leak back.
Got it.
But when it doesn't close, right, that's mitral regurgitation.
So there's a leak.
Right. And there are different reasons why this leak happens.
Right.
And with NIMR, it's due to a problem with the valve itself, like the leaflets bulging back or the cords that hold them getting damaged,
Okay.
which is different from ischemic MR, which is caused by damage to the heart muscle, often from a heart attack.
So that's a big distinction. Why is that so important for someone who might be facing mitral valve surgery?
Well, because the underlying cause really drives the treatment options and what kind of outcome someone might expect.
Okay.
So if we look at this 2021 research study, it focused on NIMR patients. And it showed that those who had their mitral valve repaired had a significantly better chance of survival compared to those who had a replacement. In fact, the study found that choosing repair over replacement increased the likelihood of living longer by a remarkable 44%.
Wow, 44%. That's a lot bigger than I would have thought.
Yeah, it's pretty substantial.
Yeah.
And what's even more interesting is that this survival benefit held true, even though the repair group had more folks with diabetes and atrial fibrillation.
So even with those pre-existing conditions.
Exactly. You'd think those extra health challenges would make replacement seem like the safer option, but it wasn't the case.
Interesting.
Repairing the native valve when possible seems to have a real edge in the long run.
So that feels like a pretty big takeaway right there for a listener. If you're dealing with NIMR, repair seems like the way to go for better long-term survival.
Yeah.
This study also found a couple of other benefits to repair, right?
Absolutely. People in the repair group also had lower chances of needing another operation and less risk of their mitral regurgitation coming back after surgery.
So lower risk of that leak coming back.
Exactly. It's not a guarantee, of course, but it definitely tilts the scales in favor of repair.
That makes sense, but hold on. If repair has all of these advantages, why would replacement even be considered?
Yeah.
When does that become the better option?
Well, there are definitely situations where replacement is necessary.
Okay.
For example, if the valve is really damaged or maybe calcified or just has too many complex issues, then a successful and durable repair becomes much harder.
Ah, so it's really about the condition of the valve itself.
Yeah.
And our book chapters actually go into some of those trickier situations.
Yeah.
They mentioned that repairing a Barlow's valve or a rheumatic mitral valve can be particularly challenging. Can you kind of elaborate on why that is?
Sure. So in Barlow's valve, you often see this widespread weakening of the leaflets and an enlarged valve ring. And that makes it tough to get a really solid repair.
Okay.
And with rheumatic mitral disease, the leaflets can become scarred and stiff due to rheumatic fever, which makes them less likely to function well after a repair.
So even though repair is generally preferred, the reality is that some valves are just too complex or damaged to fix reliably.
That's right. And that's why it's so important to have a really open and honest conversation with your surgeon.
Right.
You need to understand the specifics of your valve and why they recommend one procedure over the other.
That makes a lot of sense. Knowing your own situation is key.
Right.
Now, this source from UpToDate talks about something called conflicts of interest. And I'm curious how that might play into medical recommendations for mitral valve surgery.
Yeah, conflicts of interest happen when a doctor's personal interests, like financial ties to a specific medical device company, could influence their judgment. UpToDate does its best to manage these conflicts but it's always good to be aware that they exist.
So it's like a little reminder to always ask questions and understand why your surgeon is recommending a particular path.
Absolutely. And that leads us perfectly into our next topic, cardiac rehabilitation.
Okay.
No matter which surgery you have, repair or replacement, rehab is crucial for recovery.
So that's kind of a universal thing.
It is.
Regardless of which procedure you have done.
Yeah. And our Cochrane review on this focused on exercise-based programs.
Okay.
And it's interesting that many studies didn't even have a control group to compare against.
So it makes it a little tricky to definitively say that's why.
Yeah. So it seems like we're still learning about the full impact of cardiac rehab.
But despite that, the review did find some positive outcomes, right?
Yes, definitely. They found that cardiac rehab could improve your oxygen uptake.
Okay.
Meaning your body gets better at using oxygen. And it can also have a positive effect on your physical quality of life, so you actually feel better.
So it's not just about getting back to your old routine. It's about making your heart as healthy as possible.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good place to pause for now.
Okay.
We've covered a lot of ground.
We have.
And in part two, we'll dive into some of the specific techniques involved in mitral valve repair. But before we go, what's the one thing you want our listener to walk away with from this part of the deep dive?
I think the biggest takeaway is that when it comes to non-ischemic mitral regurgitation, repair seems to be the gold standard for better survival and lower chances of needing another surgery.
Okay.
But it's not always possible.
Of course.
So having that open conversation with your surgeon about your specific situation is crucial.
Couldn't agree more. All right, so now let's zoom in a little bit.
Quick.
You mentioned that the condition of the valve itself plays a big role in this whole decision between repair and replacement.
Right.
Can you walk us through some of the techniques that surgeons actually use to repair a mitral valve?
Sure.
Because I have to admit, it all seems kind of mysterious to me.
Yeah, it's definitely intricate work, but we can try to break it down.
Okay.
So the mitral valve, it's not just a simple flap.
Right.
It's got these leaflets, cords that support them, and a ring around the valve called the annulus.
Okay, so multiple parts.
Yeah, and this annulus isn't just a static ring. It actually moves and changes shape during the heartbeat, helping those leaflets close tightly and prevent leaks.
So it's kind of like a dynamic support system for the valve.
Precisely, and when it becomes weak or stretched out, that can contribute to mitral regurgitation.
Oh, okay.
And that's where a technique called annuloplasty comes in.
Okay.
Surgeons use a ring-like device to reshape and stabilize the annulus, restoring the valve's normal function.
So they're basically giving it some extra support.
Exactly. It's like reinforcing a loose buttonhole on a shirt to keep the button from popping out.
I like that analogy. Yeah. That makes it much easier to picture.
Good.
Now, what about those cords that support the leaflets?
Right.
We talked about their importance earlier.
Yeah.
What happens when those get damaged?
That's a great question. So the cords, also known as the chordae tendineae.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, they're essential for proper valve function.
Okay.
And if they're too stretched out or even ruptured, the valve can't close properly and you get that leak.
Right. So how do surgeons actually repair those damaged cords?
Well, they have a few different techniques they can use.
Okay.
One is called chordal transposition, where they take healthy cords from a strong part of the valve and use them to support a weaker prolapsing section.
So they're kind of like repurposing the valve's own parts.
Exactly. It's like borrowing a sturdy support beam from one part of a bridge to reinforce a weaker section.
Ah, that makes sense. So what if the cords are just too damaged to be reused?
Well, in those cases, they can actually use artificial cords.
Really?
Made from a special material called Gore-Tex.
Wow.
And our source material mentions a study that followed patients for a long time after getting these artificial cords.
Okay.
And the outcomes were really promising.
So that's pretty cool. It's amazing how far these surgical techniques have come.
It really is.
But I know from our sources that repairing a mitral valve isn't always straightforward.
Right.
There can be some specific challenges depending on what's causing the valve to leak in the first place.
Definitely. We touched on this earlier, but repairing a Barlow's valve or a rheumatic mitral valve can be particularly challenging.
Right. So it's not like a one-size-fits-all kind of repair. It really comes down to the anatomy of the valve.
Yeah, and what's causing the problem.
Exactly. So let's say the surgeon has gone in and looked at the valve. What are some of the key factors that they look at to decide ultimately to go with repair or replacement?
That's the million-dollar question.
Right.
And it doesn't have a simple answer.
Okay.
It's a complex decision.
Right.
That takes into account a lot of different variables.
Like what?
Well, one of the first things they consider is the extent and type of valve damage.
Okay.
Is it just one leaflet that's prolapsing? Or are multiple leaflets involved?
Hmm.
Are the cords simply stretched out? Or are they ruptured or thickened?
Okay.
Is there a lot of calcium buildup on the valve? All of these factors play a role.
So it's not just can it be repaired, it's also about will that repair last?
Exactly.
Is it going to be durable and effective?
Right. Surgeons want to make sure that if they do a repair, it's going to hold up over time.
Of course.
And the patient won't end up needing another surgery soon after.
Right, right.
And that's where the expertise and judgment of the surgeon really come in.
Right.
They have to weigh the pros and cons of each approach based on the individual patient's situation.
So it really is very individualized.
It is.
It's not just about the valve. It's about the patient's overall health too, right?
Absolutely. Things like age,
yeah.
Overall health, other medical conditions, even lifestyle preferences can all play a role.
So like a younger, healthier patient might be a better candidate for repair.
Right, because they're looking for a long-term solution.
Right.
With a lower chance of needing another operation down the road.
And someone who's older or has other health issues might go for replacement.
Yeah.
Because it's a less complex surgery, potentially a quicker recovery.
Exactly. It's about finding the best solution for each individual patient.
And that's where that communication between the doctor and the patient is so important.
Couldn't agree more.
To really understand all of the factors.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think this is a good point to kind of pause and reflect on everything we've discussed so far.
Right.
We've learned about the complexities of mitral valve repair, the techniques involved, and the factors that surgeons consider when making these decisions.
Right.
But there's one more piece of the puzzle we need to explore. Mm-hmm. And in part three, we'll dive into the pros and cons of mitral valve replacement.
This is good.
All right. So we've spent a lot of time talking about repairing the mitral valve, but we know that's not always the best option.
Right.
So let's dive into the other side of the coin. Mitral valve replacement.
Okay.
When does this become the go-to choice?
Well, it really comes down to those situations where repairing the valve just isn't feasible.
Okay.
Or it might not lead to the best long-term outcome.
Got it.
Remember we talked about those complex valve pathologies like Barlow's or rheumatic mitral disease?
Right.
That can make repair really tricky.
Yeah.
Sometimes the damage is just too extensive. Or the risk of the repair failing is too high.
So in those cases, replacement becomes the more sensible approach.
Exactly. And it's not just about the condition of the valve itself.
Okay.
The patient's overall health and their individual needs also play a big role.
Right. So like we were talking about before.
Right. A younger, healthier patient might be more inclined towards repair.
Yeah.
Aiming for a longer lasting solution.
Right.
But for someone older or someone with other health challenges, replacement might be a better fit.
Okay.
It's often a less complex surgery with a quicker recovery time.
That makes sense. So let's say replacement is the chosen path.
Okay.
What are the different types of replacement valves available and what are the key differences between them?
So there are two main types,
mm-hmm.
mechanical valves and bioprosthetic valves.
Okay. So two main categories.
Right. Mechanical valves are made from very durable materials like carbon or metal.
Okay.
And they're designed to last a very long time.
Okay.
Potentially a lifetime.
So that sounds pretty good.
Yeah,
yeah,
which is a huge plus.
Right.
But there's a trade-off.
Well, what's the catch?
To prevent blood clots from forming on these mechanical valves.
Okay.
You have to take blood thinners for the rest of your life.
So that's a big commitment.
It is a big commitment.
Yeah, and comes with its own set of risks and lifestyle changes.
Exactly.
Okay, so what about those bioprosthetic valves?
Right.
How do they compare?
Bioprosthetic valves are made from animal tissue, usually pig or cow heart valves.
Mm.
They're often a preferred choice for older patients because they don't require long-term blood thinners.
Oh, okay. So that's a big difference right there.
It is.
But I imagine there's got to be some downside, right?
You're right. There is a downside.
Well, nothing's perfect.
Exactly. Bioprosthetic valves don't last as long as mechanical valves.
Okay.
They tend to wear out over time,
mm-mm.
especially in younger patients.
Okay.
So that means there's a higher chance of needing another valve replacement surgery down the road.
So it's really this trade-off between durability and the need for blood thinners.
Right.
It sounds like a really personal decision.
It is.
To weigh those factors.
It is. And that's why that conversation with your surgeon is so crucial.
Right.
They can help you understand the pros and cons of each valve type and guide you toward the best choice for your specific needs.
Absolutely. Okay. So let's say the decision has been made, the surgery is done.
Okay.
You're on the road to recovery.
Yep.
We talked about cardiac rehab.
Right.
But are there any other long-term considerations for people who've had a mitral valve replacement?
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Regular follow-up appointments with your cardiologist are essential.
Okay.
To monitor your heart function, make sure everything is working as it should.
Got it.
And depending on the type of valve you receive, you might need periodic echocardiograms or other tests.
So it's not just about recovering from surgery. It's about maintaining that heart health long term.
Absolutely. It's a lifelong commitment to taking care of your heart.
It really is. But you're not alone in this journey.
Right.
There are support groups and online resources and a whole team of healthcare professionals there to help.
Absolutely.
Well, it's amazing to think about how far medical science has come.
It is.
You know, giving people with heart valve problems the chance to live longer, healthier lives.
Yeah.
I think we've covered a lot of important information in this deep dive, from understanding the different causes of mitral regurgitation to exploring the nuances of repair and replacement.
Definitely.
We've really gone in depth. So to kind of wrap things up, is there one final thought or piece of advice you want to leave our listener with?
I think the biggest thing is to remember that knowledge is power.
Okay.
The more you understand about your condition and the options available, the better equipped you'll be to make informed decisions in partnership with your healthcare team.
That's a great point.
Don't be afraid to ask questions, seek second opinions if needed, and be an active participant in your own care.
That's great advice. And that brings us to the end of our deep dive into mitral valve surgery. We hope you found this journey informative and empowering.
I hope so too.
And remember, take care of your heart. It's the engine that keeps you going.